she was kind of saying that she knows who she is, and she's 47 years old, and she doesn't want to keep growing, but that she wants to keep evolving.
I'm so in love with this person without knowing them. You know what she's saying? I don't want to judge myself. The nuance of evolving versus growth is when you are in this game of growth, if you watch the people that are most obsessed with it, they're overjudging themselves. They're subtly beating themselves up like, I need to be better. I'm not good at this. I think what she's saying, quick hot take on hearing that, because it really hit me in my chest, because I'm very similar, is I don't want to beat myself up.
Mm-hmm. This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
So you've spoken a lot about the importance of self-awareness.
Yes.
And you're like knowing your own strengths and weaknesses. So when you were transitioning out of, you know, your dad's wine business,
yes.
How did you identify the skills and passions that you wanted to pursue as an entrepreneur?
There was a level of like self-awareness, but also passion, right? And I talked about passion a lot in my early career, and it was because of this. When I was leaving my dad's business, it was mainly because my brother AJ was graduating from college. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I wanted to do a business with him. And it was also because I was in a family business. And for all the people that are watching or listening, family businesses work very different. They work like the following. I mean, immigrant family businesses, like the one I was part of, which was, you don't get paid a lot, mm-hmm. and you only get to own the business when the old man or the old woman die.
Right.
So I was starting to have these combos with my dad. I was like, Dad, I'm 34 now. Like, I'm starting to be a big boy. And hey, by the way, I've helped build your business from a $4 to a $70 million business. Mm-hmm. I need to go do something, I think, for myself kind of thing. And so I knew that I was getting close to that transition. AJ was graduating in like 6 months to a year, and I was like, crap, I gotta pick.
Right.
And back to your question on self-awareness, I said to myself, what do I like and what am I good at?
Mm-hmm.
And that pointed to marketing. I built my dad's business, not only because I knew wine or, you know, and I educated myself very real in that.
Yeah.
It was because I did a website in 96. I did email marketing in 97.
Right.
I did Google AdWords in 2001 or two when nobody was doing these things.
Mm-hmm.
They all worked. And at this point when I was transitioning, I did a YouTube show that was crushing. I was one of the first people to have a million followers on Twitter. And I was like, hey, I'm good at this.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it.
Right.
When I sold lemonade, I literally sold lemonade as a kid mainly because I wanted to make the sign. Kind of, you know, like it's, you know, but I didn't realize that at the time.
Right.
But at this, back to self-awareness, I was like, oh, baseball card shows. I loved selling baseball cards, but figuring out different ways to sell them was cool.
Right.
The dollar rack, the spin the wheel, the $9 boxes. So I realized I was a marketer. That was the self-awareness. I realized I liked it. Because I could have done a wine thing, because
mm-hmm.
I knew wine really well,
mm-hmm.
but I knew I liked marketing more than wine, even though I liked wine. And so I think it was just being really aware and willing to think of yourself in a different way. I had never, this is true now,
mm-hmm.
I had never thought of myself as a marketer prior to the year before I started this company. I thought of myself as a businessman.
Right.
I thought of myself as a salesman,
mm-hmm.
but I never thought of myself as an advertising person.
Right.
I was just doing what I thought would sell wine.
Mm-hmm.
And then I re-looked at myself through the lens of self-awareness and passion, because I had a life decision to make, and that's how I got there.
Okay, now with the self-awareness and passion, what fears came up when knowing that you were going to be an entrepreneur? And second half of that question is, what advice would you give to entrepreneurs who are struggling with similar concerns?
This is where I hate that the uniqueness of my life isn't a great answer, but I can give you an answer as someone who's talked to a trillion people.
Okay.
And here's where I'm going with that. I was such a poor student as a child.
Mm-hmm.
I was, after about fourth grade, not as good at sports as like the best people in sports. I had good hand-eye coordination, I was a scrapper. But I was selling stuff my whole life, which meant I got a ton of no's.
Yeah.
That by the time I got to a place of like running my dad's business or then starting my own businesses, I wasn't scared of anything.
Right. Did you feel like you had nothing to lose?
It was even better than that. I didn't care if I lost. It wasn't that I didn't have anything to lose. It was that I didn't care if I lost. I cared if I didn't try. Like, it was like, I often use this analogy of, like, you know how in the summer lightning bugs go to that, like, blue light, and, like, they almost, like, I always think, like, they know that they're gonna get killed if they go to the light, but they can't help it. They're like, they're just going to the light.
Yeah.
That's how entrepreneurship is for me. Like,
right.
I don't have another gear. So what I would tell everybody is fall in love with losing. What I would tell parents, actually, the people I really want to talk on this one is parents. The reason eighth place trophies was a misstep was what we were teaching kids was losing, we were demonizing it. We were saying to them, losing's bad, so nobody should lose. And what happened was the young Gen Z generation, the young millennial Gen Z generation was really, unfortunately, not everyone, there's millions of parents that parented differently, but by and large, especially in first world countries, a lot of people today, the age 18 to 32, grew up in a parenting model that believed in eighth place trophies, that believed in delusion, self-esteem building. Because I think self-esteem building is the best, but I think it has to be grounded in practicality.
Right.
Like,
right.
If your kid...
Inflate it, it can't, right.
Yeah, like if your kid doesn't have a musical bone in their body, but she loves Beyonce, it's probably a bad idea to tell her she could be Beyonce too.
Right.
But we lived through that.
Right.
We're starting to change because I think we're seeing the ramifications.
Right.
I would argue a lot of things that are most dangerous about society today is far more grounded in some of the theories of modern parenting than it is grounded in social media. And I think we have to start taking on accountability. So what I would tell everybody is the following. What were my fears? None. I've been losing all my life. In school, in sports, in like business, like that I was prepared to lose again. Most people aren't prepared to lose again. Most people, the reason so many Ivy League school kids struggle as operators is they weren't accustomed to losing. When I was an investor, I realized, oh, wait a minute. And I'll tell you, it's really funny, back to some of the movies and some of the stuff, I found that kids that weren't popular, but were Ivy League kids, did better as entrepreneurs than the kind of the lax superstar, the good looking guy who went to pet, like they just had too much winning and were scared of losing. And then the problem with a business is there's no judge and jury, it's just the market.
Right.
There's no teacher, there's no family relationships, it's just the merit of the business. So I would say, I didn't have fear, but I would say to answer your question in a way that I hope brings value for the parents that are listening right now, the quicker you teach your children that losing is not only bad, but weirdly kind of cool. Like, I'm very depressed right now because the Knicks have lost the last two games,
yes.
Okay?
I didn't want to bring it up.
Yeah, thank you. So I flew home late last night after the game. And like, I'm sad, but secretly, I kind of like it because I like the pain as a, like it's part of me. And I think more children, more humans need to learn how to be able to deal with adversity and losing. It'll make them happier.
You probably know this, there's this clip going around on the internet right now, and I don't know the player's name, but the guy who is sitting having the conversation with,
what's that?
Is it?
Probably the youngest.
Yeah, exactly. Where the guy asks him, you know, did he fail this season? And he goes on a very similar tangent to say that, you know, no, he didn't fail this season. Did he get the wins that he wanted? No, but it makes him want to work harder. And he has more goals. And, you know, he basically turned it around on the guy and said, you know, did you get a promotion this year? And the guy's like, no. He's like, well, was your year a failure? And the guy's like, no. And he's like, okay, well, it's all about, like, perspective in terms of, you know what you're. Oh yeah, you can come. Thank you. In terms of
so
what?
Many decisions to be made in these settings.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I mean, well, that's why sports is the best. You can't hide.
Right.
You know, people hide in everything else. Even entrepreneurship. I love entrepreneurship because it's the closest. But you can still hide. I have an acquaintance, who in their profile it says three on their Instagram, 3-time exiting entrepreneur. Looks fancy. In reality, because I know the situation, all three companies were a disaster.
Really?
Yep. All of the exits were M&A on a penny on the dollar. One was an acqui-hire.
Okay.
And one was bought after an obnoxious amount of funding for 4 cents on the dollar. So, but in Giannis's game, you can't hide.
No.
Like, the Knicks lost last night. That's it. And this is why I've always loved sports, the merit. An Academy Award was a political decision behind the scenes by a group of people. So everything else besides sports in a lot of ways is merit-based, and that's why I've always loved it. Business is close, but to your point, I love that Giannis did that because there's so many comps to it. Like, right now a lot of people are realizing what athletes are dealing with because now everyone's putting themselves out there and they're getting commented about everything, about everything, about everything.
Right.
And that's what athletes have always had to deal with. One bad night and everyone's got all sorts of things to say. Every one of us in this room right now, including these two lovely ladies who are dominating at their craft, we have bad days.
Yeah.
You know, and, but it's hidden.
Right.
You know, it's a very interesting human psychology conversation. I love that that viral clip is going because I hope it helps people.
Speaking of the, like, the viral, or like the, sorry, the like the humanistic aspect of sportsmanship.
Yes.
This is a random side note, but
please.
I really feel like there's a new kind of way for fans to interact and have ownership with like their teams through like this Web3 type of, and I got to like hang out with Ray Lewis and go check out his new facility in Cleveland.
Yep.
And I feel like if you guys haven't chatted, maybe you should.
Yes, I've spoken to Ray. I know how entrepreneurial he is. We share a great friend, Reed Bergman, who works for me actually, and I'm super aware. And that's right. Like, the best part of Web3 that is yet to be realized is the smart contracts,
right,
the connection point. There's still a lot of clarity we need from the US government and the world on what to do with all this stuff.
Right.
But with AI coming and us having to prove provenance, like, by the way, we're doing an interview right now. Everything we're saying is being recorded, and that used to be like the truth. Now we have deep fake videos coming out.
Right.
Somebody could literally take this video of us and change the things we're saying. Like, the world's about to go through a real revolution, and I do think that the blockchain and Web3 is gonna be a actually good contributor to it. And I think to your point, like, the relationship graph of everything,
right,
is about to happen. I think about like the Grateful Dead and Fish and those bands that like people traveled with.
Yeah.
Like, what if those people in the 60s had an NFT that could like go with it? Like, so many cool things instead of just collecting ticket stubs,
yeah,
or photos. So
right.
I'm excited about the future.
That's cool. Okay. All right. So you're really known for your grind. You're consistent day after day. How do you kind of keep the intensity and the focus up, specifically in the moments of like setbacks and hardships?
By not having success, especially financial or notoriety, validate anything in my life.
Hmm.
Oh, you like that one?
Wow.
No, this is the biggest thing that people don't know about me. Like I always get scared when people are like, you're known for the grind and the hustle, because I know that there's a parallel to like burnout, and like, I'm not even close to any of those things because I have incredible enjoyment in what I do, and I don't do it for the notoriety or the money. And more importantly, and you've gotten to know me through these years, it's just not my validation.
Mm-hmm.
I am much more associated to being nice and people knowing that to be true,
mm-hmm,
than I am to how many followers I have or how much money I have.
That is, like, honestly, if there is one takeaway from this entire video today, I hope people listening at home can understand that their validation, it does not need to be through their financial successes and work commitments.
The reason, like, you know, like, the people in my
work achievements,
right? Yeah, the people that are super closest to me, my family, and like the closest friends that go into family zones, they all know the truth, which is like, I'm crazy chill. I'm hyper when I communicate. Like, I have high energy. Like, I'm,
because you're also passionate.
Yeah, I'm happy.
Right.
I'm happy because of my simplicity, which seems really crazy. I get it, because I am an entrepreneur and because I do have a lot of things going on. But the thing that I think works for me, and I see it in others, but to your point, the majority of my contemporaries are very different than I am. They are, unfortunately, in my opinion, because I worry about them, too wrapped up in achievement, money, status. I mean, the thing that, you know, this has been lately on my mind, maybe because I was in Miami for F1 and I watched it play out again. People are heartbroken when they don't get invited to the good party.
Yeah.
They're like crushed when they have to wait in line and they don't have, like people wearing all the bracelets. Like, and I'm like, man, high school plays forever.
Yeah.
I'm like, these people are some of the most successful, attractive, financially successful, status. You know, I know a lot of these people like have good families, have like great children, like, and they are like blowing a gasket. Mm-hmm. Or just, I can see the upsetness in their face because they weren't invited to Carbone Beach.
Right.
I mean, like, I love Jeff, but like it's gonna be okay.
Yeah.
Like, and so, and social media has amplified that, but it hasn't changed that. I hate when people are like, we gotta blame social. Do we? Because my daddy's liquor store was not far from a town called Short Hills, New Jersey. And I watched all those people in Short Hills, New Jersey. When somebody got a new Mercedes, they needed to get a new Mercedes.
Right.
When somebody came into my, I watched people my whole life come in, buy a case of Opus One, and watch the next customer waiting and hear it because they know that person, and buy two cases of Opus One.
Right.
Like, it's been a flex show for life.
Right.
And, you know, and fashion's become such a bigger part of our life, and so what brands people are wearing and this and that, and so I'm really glad we're touching on this, and I do think, especially knowing how epic your audience is, I think this is gonna help some people. Like how am I handling it all?
Yeah.
Because if it all went away tomorrow, I'd be just fine. Mm-hmm. I don't need to take another selfie. I don't need to make another dollar. I was super, back to like, I got fortunate. And I'll say this as well for everyone who's listening. The greatest thing that ever happened in my life was I grew up with very little. I was born in the Soviet Union. I came here when I was little, but I was happy. Mm-hmm. So for the first 10 years of my life, we had dick. And I was happy every day because I have an iconic all-time great mom. Mm-hmm. And you don't need those things to be happy. And so I was born and lived in a way where I knew that that wasn't a direct correlation.
Right.
A lot of people, my children included, will never know, is it the money or is it not?
Right.
And so you get caught up in this thing of like, oh, okay, like anytime I say like money doesn't buy happiness, the comments are littered with easy for you to say. And I'm like, you don't know me like that.
Right.
You don't know me. Like, easy for me to say because I've actually lived it, not because I have money now that, oh, by the way, I earned. And so I think for a lot of people, they don't know. And I think, you know, one of the great things of living a life where you go coast to coast in your journey is you know.
Right.
You know that there are, like, I have unlimited people that have hundreds of millions of dollars to their name and are deeply unhappy.
Yeah.
You know this.
Yeah.
We're very fortunate. We run in circles. We've been in places around the world and you see it and it's really sad. And I think it has everything to do, and I really appreciate both of you reacting the way you did. It's the one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the one thing I need to make sure I communicate before I die, that if you are not attached, and by the way, it's the same way I think about beauty.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest things I worry about is what parents affirm to children on their way up. If you are a human, and the first 20 years of your life, your parents, your relatives, and your classmates continue to give you validation because you are attractive, what do you think is gonna happen when you're 50 and Father Time is starting to play its game? Of course you're gonna go through some feelings. Of course you're gonna probably over worry about that. You were taught that that's your validation, but that's the same thing about sports. You know how many people are great at sports and then don't make it into the professional realm and then really struggle with the transition because all their validation, it's the same way I think about straight A's.
Right.
My biggest problem with school is if you keep telling a kid, you're great, you're great, you're great, because you're getting A's, the problem is the world doesn't work on A, B's, and C's.
Right.
And so you have a lot of people in their 20s to 30s who struggle in life transition because all they've ever known is how to figure out a school system.
Right.
That's what the world told them they were good for.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think as parents, we have to be careful of what we validate, which is why what my mom did for me is what I am passionate about doing for not only my children, but the world, which is like, let's validate on how we treat each other.
Right,
my mom once lost her mind as if I won the Nobel Peace Prize because I'm visualizing it right now. I was less than 10 years old. I opened the door for an elderly woman to walk into a McDonald's in North Plainfield, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
You would have thought that I cured cancer. My mom spent the next 2 hours telling me why that was so great, why that is the thing, why you're the best.
Right.
She called me golden hearted my whole life.
Mm.
Of course, I answered my question earlier about what I care about.
Right.
It's what she instilled.
Right.
I want to be known for how I treat people.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of beauty, I was at a dinner last night there was an emotional intelligence coach there who was moderating a conversation, and it was a really beautiful conversation, and I'm going to touch on this in a second as well on a different part of the convo, but she mentioned that when she was growing up, her mother did not allow her to wear makeup until she was 18, and she was obviously really annoyed by that as a teenager, but it was really to instill the fact that she wanted her daughter to be comfortable in her own skin. And I feel like that is another, you know, version of, when I heard that, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so like on the money, as I like start to think about how I, you know, how I behave in front of my kids, you know, the types of routines I show them, and, you know, the way I speak to them about their self-confidence. And, you know, I feel like these moments we don't talk about them that often, but they're really quite important, and they end up shaping us from like a, you know, a whole identity standpoint.
In a way that I couldn't believe in it more.
Right.
Meaning, you may or may not have to go to aggressive tactics or what may seem like an aggressive tactic, but instilling the right things is everything. And so, like, for example, and you know this because you're very educated in this, there's a lot of variance to beauty versus health and wellness. Mm-hmm. So like there's the concept of like lip filler, mm-hmm, is very different than eating clean. So I think that's going to be a big topic of conversation over the next 20 years as we get more advanced than what you just talked about. There are certain things that are artificial enhancements to live up to the current state of beauty.
Right.
Right? Look at your life. Mm-hmm. I look at you and I can see visually, huh, she grew up in an era where girls that look like her were the standard, and now as she's older, her look is more the standard, mm-hmm, and standards change.
Right.
Right? What is considered beautiful changes. So there are differences of like, are you in a life cycle where the way you look is considered the standard of the day, mm-hmm, or is it not? And then do you do something about it to keep up with the Joneses?
Right.
Or are you doing things that are gonna keep you healthy? You know, like, and those are very interesting nuances that I don't think are being broken down just yet in health, agree, wellness, and beauty.
I would agree.
Including, I'll give you another one, cosmetics that are clean, mm-hmm, versus not.
Right.
Right? Those are like new conversations we're having, but to your point, are we as parents teaching our children your validation to the world, your self-esteem should be wrapped up in how you look or on who you are? And I think they come in all shapes and sizes, and I think it's dangerous to be black and white.
Right.
Because, you know, look, I think beauty is like an important part of the world. We like marvel at like sunsets.
Yeah.
And we like when it's nice outside. Like, we shouldn't demonize some things. I don't think it's a trivial thing. I don't, mm-hmm, think it's not important. But I think balance and all this. I think a lot about the color purple these days. Mm-hmm. So as America has really locked into a war amongst red and blue, mm-hmm, politically,
yeah,
I know the way we get out of this is by everyone falling in love with purple. Mm. And I think everyone's digging in too deep. People are even changing their minds on things just to fit a red or a blue. Mm. And so I think this issue fits similarly, which is like, we shouldn't demonize people that want to look good. I think it matters quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But we can't make it the thing they're completely known for. And to the point of this combo, when are we gonna start holding people up on a pedestal that are the nicest?
Yeah.
Not the richest or the, right, prettiest.
Correct.
And I think we have the potential to do that.
Totally. I really hope so. I think as a society, we do have the potential to do that too.
Well, I think it happens in pockets, right?
Yeah.
You and I have a lot of different, like, you probably have 3, 4, 5, 2, 6 meaningful friend groups.
Mm-hmm.
In my world, I would argue that most of my friend groups that really are my actual friends are actually quietly built on that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you just want to be with people that are nice.
Of course.
You know, or common interests.
Right. Okay. Switching gears a little bit, but it's kind of on the same. I mean, it all works into itself. As someone who recently pivoted in their business, I closed the doors on HB Fit.
Yep.
How
did that feel?
You know what? It honestly, like, a weight was lifted.
Good.
And
how long did you sit on it?
I mean, I've been sitting on it for about 15 months.
Yeah. 2 years. I always think people, like, especially when you're like anybody who's, this is so important, everyone who's listening, having the strength to close something when you are so out in front of it,
mm-hmm,
is one of the most courageous acts a human can do. which is why it always takes time to do it.
Yeah, and I was really nervous.
Makes sense.
I was really, really nervous. But ultimately, like, it just, the business model didn't make sense. I don't have, you know, I would have to hire 3 more people. I don't have that salary income. I don't have, you know, I'm not raising money for it. It doesn't make any money.
Like, it ran just, its course.
It ran its course. And anyway, so what would you, I feel like you're the type of person who takes pivots and strides. Like you.
Well, it goes back to what we were talking about
exactly.
earlier.
Exactly.
You know, to your point, rightfully so. Because I know enough about you, you're thinking from a B2C and a B2B perspective, what is this gonna look like? Because mm-hmm. that's the right thing to do. You're a young, ambitious woman with lots of goals and tons of stuff in front of you, and you are actually being thoughtful by saying, hey, this is something I'm very associated with. People are gonna have judgment on this.
Mm-hmm.
What is this gonna mean? And to your point, why I'm like really excited you brought this up, and what I'm hoping people get out of this is, even if you, and this is not your case because you have too many other things that you're winning on, but let's say for everyone at home right now, even if the one thing that you're known for, the only thing that's seemingly on paper is a win for you in your career, you're not multi-dimensional, like you're just the ice cream man, you have 4 ice cream shops, that's what you're known for, like that's it, and you're at a point where it's not going well. Like maybe somebody's come in and innovated and is beating you up and you're underwater and now you're taking your savings to keep up the business. These are real talks.
Yeah.
Even for that person, if something's not right, it's only causing an emotional cancer inside of you. Mm-hmm. The anxiety, the sleepless nights, the passive aggressive ways you're acting with the people around you because you're not happy.
Right.
It's just a weight.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is even with all the judgment, you've got to get into a place and saying, look, here's the thing that works for me when I do it. Hey, I'm gonna have to take this L. It's really not fun. I don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a news cycle. And everybody has a news cycle. Some people only have 4 relatives that are part of the news cycle. Other people have 100 million followers. From Beyonce to Ricky Thompson, who has, his mom is the news cycle. That's the only person he even knows. He's an introvert and a hermit, and the only person even knows who he is and what he's doing is his mom.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has a news cycle where people are gonna have judgment.
Mm-hmm.
People are gonna have to say what they say. But actually, I'm gonna give you an interesting answer to this, Hannah, as I've been setting up the answer.
Okay.
The answer to the question is humility.
Mm.
The reason I can deal with it in stride is because I always, after I think it all the way through, go to this final place. Who gives a shit what the fuck I'm doing? Yeah, you see where this goes? It's really neat. I go through all the things that I was talking about, but where do I end up to why I get to a good place? It's humility. At the end of the day, for all the good things that are going for me in entrepreneur land, when, not if, when I have entrepreneurial failures in the future, what will allow me to do it and make me take it in stride is realizing that I don't mean that much in the world at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
That cool. There'll be 24 hours on Twitter where people are like, see Gary, you're not as good as you thought you were. Maybe there's a couple people that were disappointed internally of like, man, how did he not pull off? Like he should have been good at selling footballs.
Right.
Like he likes football, like why did that not work? And what really always gets me there is like humility. I think humility is an incredibly important part of the ingredients that an alpha, an ambitious, a striver needs to have. I ultimately think like, yeah, there'll be some judgment, but like they'll move on to the next thing the next day.
Totally.
Like in a year, are people really gonna be talking about it? Not really. They're gonna move on to, and by the way, I also have a lot of compassion for people that are in the business of gossip and tearing people down.
Totally.
Like what a miserable life reality to be in where you're spending all your time tearing other people's, you know, realities down. Like honestly, as long as you gave it your best effort,
mm-hmm.
then I admire people that take those chances.
Yeah, you're gonna get buffed, you're not gonna do any color.
Understood. Though, I've been very bullish on male makeup for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a huge category.
I know. I have video, I'm very proud. I have a bunch of videos 5-6 years ago saying, next decade, watch this.
Oh, if anyone's listening who's trying to create a male color cosmetic company,
it's huge.
This is your angel investor right here.
100%.
Okay.
Mocktails.
Oh yeah, huge.
Huge.
Huge. Okay, so last question really. Please. Before our quick fire round because you're almost done. Last night I was at this dinner and this yes. emotional intelligence coach was, you know, having this amazing conversation. And she mentioned something about, like, you know how we're always just, like, looking to talk about or engage in personal growth?
Yes.
She was kind of saying that she knows who she is, and she's 47 years old, and she doesn't want to keep growing. But that she wants to keep evolving, and that those are two different things.
Do you know what I hear when I hear that?
Tell me. That's why I wanted to.
And I'm 47, so that makes me excited. I'm so in love with this person without knowing them. You know what she's saying? I don't want to judge myself. Mm. The nuance of evolving versus growth is when you are in this game of growth, if you watch the people that are most obsessed with it, they're over-judging themselves. Mm. They're subtly beating themselves up, like, I need to be better. Mm. I gotta be better.
Right.
I'm not good at this. I think what she's saying, quick hot take on hearing that, because it really hit me in my chest, because I'm very similar, is I don't want to beat myself up. Mm-hmm. I think the reason, by the way, back to the last thing, that so many people are judging everyone else mm-hmm. is because it starts at home.
Right.
They're judging themselves.
Right.
And the way they're dealing with that pain, because they keep beating themselves up, is they deploy it to others.
Right.
So, you know, when I hear that, that makes sense to me. I think we've got to find a way to be less judgmental on ourselves. But to her point, you always want to evolve.
Right.
But I understand, I think I understand where she's going.
Yeah, it was interesting because when she first started talking about, like, kind of getting over this idea of constant growth, I was kind of like saying to myself, well, but there's so many things that I want to accomplish and do. And then she moved into this, it's not about, like, you can still evolve within yourself. But the constant idea that you're not satisfied
that.
With yourself is, and I found it just like really beautiful. I thought you were gonna like that, so that's why I wanted to bring it up.
Well, it's funny, you just made me think of something that really hit my team the other day. We're on this journey at this marketing firm, and it's like really like gonna be a thing. Like, we genuinely like are starting to, and when it's all said and done, have changed the way people think about marketing in the world, which is really cool. But there's so much pushback, like people still believe a television commercial is more important than a single TikTok. Mm-hmm. And I really don't think that. Mm-hmm. That the Ocean Spray TikTok will sell more Ocean Spray, which it did, mm-hmm. than any commercial, which is true. Mm-hmm. So we're having this very philosophical meeting where the team is talking about the frustrations of getting the world on board. And I said something that's just very real to me that touches on what you just said. I looked at them all and I said, we've already won. And it's funny when you just said what you said about what she was saying. I feel like that is another big quote unquote secret to why things have worked for me. Similar to what I said earlier about not being attached to the validation of the success. When I tell you the most emotional professional day of my career to this day is still the first full day of work at my dad's store, mm-hmm. May 20 something, 1998.
Coming up on an anniversary.
Yeah. 1998 is still the most significant day of my life because somewhere around fourth grade, I dreamed for the day where I could work full time. Mm. And I remember like yesterday driving right over there, over those hills, from Hunterdon County, New Jersey to my dad's store for 40 minutes. And I remember literally saying to myself, there'll never be a better day than this because this is the starting point of what I've always wanted to do. Mm. And basically I was saying to myself, I'd won already. Regardless of what's about to happen over these next 50 years, just playing means I've won. And so like, when, you know, especially since Kobe's death, which I think really was just such a cultural, and especially because I'm very tied into being competitive and I just like a lot of the way he moved. He's one of the people that just very clear for him, it was like he'd won the day his career started. Like the game itself, and that's how entrepreneurship is for me. Mm. The game itself is the win, nothing else. Mm. And I was telling the team, we'd already won. We're like, and it was funny to see how well that landed with everyone. Mm-hmm. It like gave them some sort of weird peace of mind. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I want for every individual. Like when you go and do the thing you want to do, regardless of the money or the notoriety, if you are passionate about planting, and you've started a micro planting, farming, flower, vegetable business. If it, like the amount of people that have a business like that, that does $180,000 a year in sales, and they take home $67,000, and they live on that $67,000, and are happy as shit, it's those people. And sometimes they look like Kobe, and it's financially and culturally satisfying. It just happened to be that for him. But back to like all the hidden people mm-hmm. that we don't talk about, a dentist, that's all he ever wanted. Like, he's pumped.
Right.
I want that. That's why the first book I ever wrote was based on that. But people keep thinking it's foofy, foofy, silly stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep saying that the internet has made it very real.
Right. Sick. Okay, well, this was an amazing chat. We're just gonna do a quick fire round. So,
yep.
like, the first answer that comes to you,
yep.
we'll just have like five quick questions.
Let's do it.
Great. What's your non-negotiable in the morning?
To check my phone to make sure there's no fires.
Mine is to not check my phone.
Yeah, and again, I want to stay here because I think these would value people. That's what's so cool about the world. I would argue for most people it's not to check their phone.
Right.
But for me, I love being accountable and responsible to my world,
mm-hmm.
and I know that that gives me peace of mind.
Right.
Look on the phone, make sure that no one's had a horrific event, that the Singapore office didn't have a fire. Like, it'd be grossly negligent for me, based on the bet I've made,
right.
for me not to look. And a quick look actually then makes me calm. By the way, there's plenty of times where there's some bad stuff. Like, we lost a big client. That would seemingly be bad. That's not bad for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's micro bad. Mm-hmm. I just have to check it because I'm the last line of defense.
Right.
Okay.
How do you take your coffee?
With a lot of cream. So I'm not a coffee purist like I am a wine purist. I like the sensation of the mouthfeel of cream.
Oh, wow. Okay, for me, it's a pistachio latte.
Yummy.
Do you have a nighttime skincare routine?
No.
What would you pick? Cold plunge, massage, or sauna?
That's a good one. I would go with sauna.
I think I would too.
I really think well in that environment, which I enjoy.
I love a sweat.
If you could visit one place in the world right now, where
bless
would you,
you
go?
Bless you, Dustin. There is a like 1,000-mile garage sale that happens in August of every year. It goes from like Tennessee to like, and I've been dying to go because I love garage selling. Is like genuinely a hobby of mine. So I would go to like a small town in Tennessee to their garage sale.
Wow, okay, really wasn't expecting that.
That goes back to the way this all started, self-awareness.
Yeah.
I don't get as much enjoyment at a 3-star Michelin in France, even though that's rad because I love food and wine. I'm on in Utah, like what a place, like you can really rest. The Jets game, like one of my favorite places to go, Madison Square Garden, the plant, like, these are great joys, but there's something super weird for me personally about going to a garage sale that is like so calming and fun, and I love it.
I would probably go to the Grand Canyon. I've never been, and I feel like where I am in my life, I could use like some expansiveness.
I love that.
Yeah. Okay, is this the last one?
Yes.
Okay.
Have you ever tried a diet fad? If so, which one?
I haven't. What's really interesting though is a diet fad, even though I don't think it's a fad, I think it's probably really real, is something I've done pretty much my whole life. I fast often, and I don't mean the modern one that's like 18 hours and this, that, like I mean like 30, 40, like I really love the feeling of a fast, and at this point in my life I'm fasting almost once a week, and I mean from dinner on a Monday at 9 until Wednesday dinner, so 48
hours. Water?
I am having water, and I'm having again, not a considered modern fast because I am having coffee at times and sometimes cream, which I know disqualifies it from what people consider fasting. But I do not put a single piece of food in my body for 48 hours, probably every week. You like that one?
That was mind blowing. Wow.
Right, Dust? You see it like
I
a lot.
I feel like that's actually
feels
probably
good.
Weirdly good for your cells because people do these water fasts once a week and their cells regenerate at a very interesting rate. I've tried them all, so can't tell you. But I don't do anything now besides.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And that's what we have for you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.